creative journey. It's easy to get lost, but don't worry, you'll lift off. Sometimes you just need a creative pep talk.
Hey, you're listening to Creative Pep Talk, a weekly podcast companion for your creative journey. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. I'm an illustrator for clients like Apple, Xbox, Lego, and the New York Times. I make this show because as someone who struggles to fit into the regular world, being creative for me isn't a nice to have. It's an essential tool in my toolbox in life, and I know that I'm not alone in that. So if you're in that category, this show is for you. Do you ever feel like no one gets your creative work? You get super excited, you execute the work, you put it out in the world, and it's just crickets. This has happened to me on tons of occasions, and I've found that the one thing that has made the difference and has helped me get over this obstacle and make some progress in this area is to create deconstructed behind the scenes opportunities of my work for my audience to appreciate and understand what I'm doing on a deeper level. I can't think of anybody that has more experience and time spent exploring this idea than our guest today, Hrishikesh Hirway. Hirway is a musician and podcaster behind the hit show Song Exploder, where he gets musicians to break down some of their biggest songs and tell the stories behind them. He's had the biggest pop legends you can imagine on this show, from Madonna to John Legend, and also some of my personal favorite indie musicians like Rostam, Julian Baker, and Waxahachie. This show is so massive of a podcast that it got turned into a Netflix series with artists like R.E.M., Alicia Keys, The Killers, and Lin-Manuel Miranda. And I cannot recommend that podcast or the Netflix series more. It's an absolute masterclass of case studies in creative thinking. And it's just super inspiring, even though I'm not a musician myself. I wanted to talk to Hrishikesh because he did an amazing TED Talk on the power of walking your audience through your work and explaining your work, almost like you're a realtor showing off a house. And if you stay until the end of this episode, I'm going to come back at the very end with a call to adventure prompt that I call the creative key. And I'm saying key like a key to a map, but it also is a key in that it unlocked the biggest post I ever put on social media and ultimately a book deal. So stay tuned for that. But for now, enjoy my chat with Hrishikesh Hirway as we dive into this idea and also explore the biggest takeaways he's learned as a creative, speaking with some of the biggest creatives of our time. I just super enjoyed this chat. I hope you love it too. He's a very generous guy with tons of creative insight and experience. Here's my chat with Hrishikesh Hirway. This episode is supported by In the Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In the Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In the Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In the Making and Adobe Express for their support. Really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site, It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it, got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase. First of all, thanks just for making the time. And I'd love it if you'd maybe just give people a little synopsis or taste for what your TED Talk was about.
Sure. Yeah. I was trying to figure out, like, how do you explain this difference in perspective? The people who make a song and the people who are just experiencing it. And how do you get them? How do you draw them in? And so I had this idea of a song as a house, and all of the detail and work, and sometimes it's very messy work, you know, the stuff in the crawl spaces and things. Yeah. And then some of it's very beautiful, like the finish molding, all these things that go into building a house. And for somebody who's walking by, they don't know any of that stuff. They don't see how many rooms there are. They don't see what they look like. They just see this sort of facade. And for some people who might even love a song, that's the extent to which they experience it. They experience this sort of removed listening. And I thought Song Exploder would be a way to say, no, there's actually, it's not just this 2D front, it's this whole three-dimensional experience. Come inside, and then you actually have, not only do you get to come inside, but you have the artist who created it giving you the tour and saying, like, oh, you see this cool thing that I did over here? Also, you see this place where the wall is damaged and patched over? That's because of this mistake that I'm hoping you aren't going to notice, but is in here. You know, they show you the sort of the cool stuff, the warts and everything, and you get to understand it in a way that's a little bit more similar to how the artist who created it experiences it.
And my experience listening to the show, like, if I listen to an episode and they go deep in this one song, I feel like I always like the song more. Like, I feel like the next time I hear it, I'm more endeared to it. And your metaphor, it kind of reminded me of this conversation I had with my in-laws who are British. And we were kind of comparing our experience selling our houses. We both kind of went through that process, you know, relatively recently. And yeah. I don't know if this is how all British people do it, but from what they were saying, they were like, when you sell your house in England, you are the person who shows people through the house. Like, right. You're the actual one walking them through that. And as an American doing it, I've never experienced that. I can't imagine doing that. It sounds extremely right. Uncomfortable. But I could see all these pros and cons. Like, I could see all the, there's a lot of pros and cons to that, to those different ways of doing it. And it kind of reminded me of, I feel like there's an artistic debate on whether you should explain your work or whether you shouldn't explain your work. Now, yes. I personally, I have a podcast with 400 episodes, many of which are me just talking. So I lean towards, it's a good thing to talk about it. I like to. And I find that your podcasts like yours do something to me that connects me to the artist. And I thought what was so brilliant about your TED Talk was that you told this story and then you did it with your work. So when you played your song at first, I was hearing it. I was like, okay, that's cool. I like the sound of this. But as you told the story, all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, like it's coming to life. Could you tell a little bit about that, what that process is, like a little bit about that song and what makes it personal? And then I'd love to hear your personal creative take as a musician on striking that balance between showing people through the house and then letting them just encounter it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the song that I played as part of the TED Talk, I sort of played a little clip of this little instrumental bit of a song, and there was guitar and cello, and maybe there was a little bit of me singing. And then I told the story of what the song was about. It very briefly, you know, that it was about, it was a song that I'd written about my mom. At the time when I had written it, she had passed away a few weeks earlier. And I'd had this dream about her. And in the dream, she was not sick. She was sort of the way that I remember her from years ago. And we had this very sort of normal kind of interaction. But at the end of it, there was some acknowledgement between the two of us that she was gone, and that I told her that I missed her, and she said that she missed me too. And then I woke up from that dream, and the next day I wrote the song that was about sort of that's my experience now with her, is that it is like I can only sort of connect with her in these sort of in-between places. And the person who was playing cello on the song is Yo-Yo Ma. He was somebody who I had talked to about the song, and he played this part that's supposed to represent my mom's voice, because my mom used to hum my songs in the other room. You know, when I was first starting to make music and recording stuff in my bedroom, I'd play the same part over and over and over again. And my mom would inevitably hear it. And sometimes I'd catch her like with one of those parts stuck in her head. And that always made me feel like really connected to her, that she appreciated what I did, even though she didn't always have the language to say that. So I wanted to put that in the song. And so I, like when I recorded the demo, I just hummed it like she was humming. And then Yo-Yo Ma replaced it by playing cello. And so I sort of told that story. And then I played the same little clip again. And just to say, like, how does this feel? Like, do you have a different experience of what you heard in the compared to the first time? And then at the end of the talk, I played the whole song.
Yeah, it was incredible. I highly recommend anybody who hasn't watched the TED Talk to go check it out, because it's such a powerful example of maybe a different way to think about how people relate to creative stuff, like what makes us connect with it. I'm really fascinated by like how, you know, I've just started reading about the change in the eras of painting from the sensory and literal kind of paintings to the abstract, and how as that shift happened, artist manifestos and statements became a lot more plentiful because they felt like they needed to explain it. And I've thought a lot about how, like, for me, there's I can pinpoint a lot of times when I heard music, it didn't make sense to me. And then I saw a video of them playing it live, and I was like, oh, that makes it make sense. Or just weird things will make it click. Mm-hmm. And I wondered for yourself as a musician, like, how has that idea affected you as a musician? And have you seen examples outside of Song Exploder of how artists go about creating that extra layer, or kind of helping people navigate it, or give them a way in? I don't know.
So a big part of the origin story for Song Exploder for me comes from my college experience. I was an art major in college, and I studied photography and graphic design. And especially in photography, we would have these crits every week in class, you know, a crit, short for a critique. And half the class would be responsible for pinning up the photos that they had taken 2 weeks prior and talking about them. And we would go up one, you know, one by one, and the professor and the TA and the rest of the class would be your audience. And you'd talk about what you were trying to do, what you were trying to achieve, what the concept of your work was. And that would be sort of a preamble to everybody then like looking at the work and then asking questions and saying, oh, how come you decided to only shoot at night? If you were trying to get this thing, would it have been easier to do it during the day or something like that? And someone would have to respond, or how come you used this camera or used this lens? And sometimes people would have an answer for like, well, I did it for this reason. Sometimes people wouldn't have an answer and they'd be like, well, actually I hadn't considered that that could be an element that goes into it. And I got so much out of that. Like, I felt like it really helped me polish my sense of storytelling in my work. Not that it's like a novel or anything like that, but just the idea of like, what is it that I'm trying to communicate? What is it that I'm trying to communicate in photography? Just like, what is it that I'm seeing that I want people to see that they might not have seen otherwise? And I loved that experience, and I loved learning about other people's work in that way. When I became a musician, you know, I didn't go to school for music. I played in bands in school. And then after school, I decided that was what I wanted to do with my life and just make music. But so I never had that kind of formal experience of getting to listen to people or talk about my own work in this, you know, in this kind of crucible of like, what's the concept? How are you executing it? And why did you do what you wanted to do? But in the informal ways that I had the opportunity to do that, I always pounced on them. You know, I'd go to a friend's house and they'd play me whatever song it was that they were working on. And I'd be like, oh, wait, what is that happening? Can you mute everything else? Can I just hear that? You know, and I'd be like, oh my God, how did you do that? What did you make that with? And, you know, it was like being in school again, but for, you know, whatever, like indie music scene that I was in. And so I never got the chance to do that in school with music, and in music, I never got to do that in that kind of formal way. So what was I trying to say? So I would take every chance I had, to learn about what other people were doing.
Yeah.
Partly for my own edification, and also just because, yeah, I would love the music more by learning about it. And this thing that people have of like, oh, I don't want somebody to tell me what the song is about, because if the song is about something that's different than what I think what the song is about, then it'll ruin it for me. I don't know. I just don't have that experience. Mm-hmm. I want to know what the artist was thinking about. I think I'm curious about artists as people, and I don't necessarily want to divorce the work from whatever they were thinking about. I think it's, I don't know. I don't need it to be so selfishly my own experience in order to appreciate it. And I think I can also live sort of hand in hand with what the song makes me feel and what it might have been, what the intention behind it might have been.
Yeah. One thing that I'm struck by with that is that there's been kind of a theme this year for me with different interviews I've done, and just, I don't know, I've just been thinking a lot about, it's kind of my nature, and I think a lot of creators get stuck in this world of, in order to have something to make, I have to have like a statement. I have to have like a answer almost. And I'm just struck by how, you know, you use this podcast as a means of kind of finding this education that you didn't have for music. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, I just feel like there's an interesting shift that goes on. I feel like a lot of times as creators, or if you're going to start a podcast or you're going to make an album or whatever, you feel like, I always put it in, I'm not even a huge Lord of the Rings guy, but it's just the, like, this is the, my way into it. I feel like you either put yourself in Frodo's shoes, where you're like, I'm the hero, here's my music, or you put yourself in the Gandalf and you're like, I'm going to guide you through this thing. Whereas I feel like there's a really interesting role with Sam of this like friend companion. And it's almost, it's just really fascinating how something is amazing and taking a life of its own kind of thing, Song Exploder is, it's starting from this place of like, I need this, might as well like bring other people along on this. Like, I don't know. I just think that that's an interesting creative prompt for people, because a lot of us think, oh, we've got to have this amazing idea or answer, rather than I have a curiosity. And I even think you can make music and illustration and all kinds of art from that stance rather than, yeah, a top down kind of thing. Does that make sense?
I think so. I think that I did have, you know, a grand answer of a sort when I started the show, which is that just the belief that taking a song apart in that way and listening to the individual, you know, individual tracks and sort of slow reading the lyrics the way you would when, you know, you'd listen to, you would look at liner notes, that is something that is exciting and interesting, even fascinating, and deepens your appreciation regardless of what the song is, like regardless of what the genre is, and that you could apply it to all different kinds of things. It's not like, hey, this is a song for people who like, I mean, this is a podcast only for people who like country music or hip hop or something like that. It's just like, nope, this is, we're going to use this as a canvas, and the canvas will be filled with all different kinds of music, but we're going to treat it the same way and see what your feeling is. Like it's sort of a show that I think proves its thesis, hopefully, over the body of work as opposed to in an individual episode.
Yeah, that makes tons of sense. And it's definitely true. I've listened to episodes of the show, the TV show, or the podcast from artists who I had no interest in, personally up until that point. And then afterwards just couldn't stop thinking about the one that comes to mind for me is the Nine Inch Nails one. I wasn't a Nine Inch Nails guy. I just, you know, didn't grow up kind of in that zone. But after watching that episode of the show, I just could not stop thinking about Trent Reznor and that moment and that song and the choices they made. It was just, it's just really fascinating, and it proves your point.
Thanks.
I'm also curious, as a musician, other than kind of the bit that you talked about in the TED Talk, you've talked to some of the greatest musicians of all time, arguably, at least of our time. And I wonder if you feel like it's impacted the way that you approach making music, even just on a personal level. Do you feel like it has?
It has, definitely. And mostly for the good. I'm starting to discover something that maybe it's, I don't know if it's not good, but one thing that I've been thinking about, this is sort of, again, like a bit of a meta lesson from having made the show for so long. And it kind of goes back to the idea of like, oh, when you do this thing, you need to have the answer first. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm making the show, I'm always looking for songs that have a great story, because podcasts are a storytelling medium. And there are some great songs that have been born out of very little in terms of the raw ingredients, where it's like,
sure,
yeah, I like sat down, I like went like this, put a drums under it, made a beat, sent it to this rapper, he rapped over it. It is a huge, huge hit. But like that, you know, that isn't necessarily a story that's going to feel emotional. It might feel more technical. And I'm always looking for ones that feel like, okay, what's the story where you get a sense of the person? You know, like this, the episode is on paper about the song, but the way I try and approach it is it's about the person, and the song is just this little miniature moment of biography for them. And so I want the like richest thing that says like, that answers this question of like, who are they? Who is this person? Because of that, because I've now spent years looking for songs and being attracted to songs where I think that there's some kind of answer, you know, like I'll go after a song and I'm like, you're saying something here, and I think there's a story behind it. That when I go to write music now, I feel a deep pressure to have a great story behind this song, that it really needs to mean something. When someone has asked me, what's this song about, that I have a really compelling answer. There's a lot of great music. And honestly, there's a lot of stuff that's been featured on the podcast where like, oh, how did that come about? And people will say, well, I wrote the music and I sang this melody and I only found what the words were going to be based on the shape of the melody and, you know, and then kind of just like strung stuff together from there. And even that idea, even when the song works out that way, for me, I can't do that because I'm so hung up on this idea of like, no, the art must be meaningful. And if that's the case, then you need to have the meaning before you even go into it. That's been hard as I've been trying to write more recently. I noticed like, I can't just go and like jam and then be like, here's the song that came out of that.
Yeah. That's so funny. It's like, I mean, it's not funny creatively. I don't mean to belittle it because I know exactly the kind of mind game you're playing with yourself and how uncomfortable it can be. So I'm not trying to belittle it or anything. But it also is funny from an outside point of view. It feels like the pressure of, well, what if I had to be on Song Exploder to explain this? Like what I say, that's really funny. But you know, it kind of made me think like, I've gotten really into dream interpretation in a way that's related to storytelling lately. Mm. When I was in high school, I was super into dreams just because I was like, this is trippy, man, that kind of thing. And then now I've come full circle to see like, or to kind of appreciate people that can interpret dreams well through like, that have like really good, rich experience and that kind of work, can do it in a way where it has a very like clicking, satisfying storytelling kind of arc where you're like, oh, it's that and this and whatever. And it made me feel like, you know, even just listening to people tell the story in the on your show, that songs a lot of times feel like they're more like dreams where they're these like unconscious projections that maybe they only figure out what it's about until when they're on your show. Like sometimes you'll hear people having those moments, right? It's really satisfying. And I think some of the artists that do it really well, it seems like, do that dream projection intuitive, like these are the images that are coming out. And then before they even finish the song, have a reflective period and then maybe inject more back into it now that they understand it. Do you have you felt like you've seen people maybe have new layers of meaning as they're working it out on your show?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll ask a question and be like, I thought maybe this connected to this. And they'll say like, gosh, I did not think about it when I was writing it. But I, now that you have connected those dots for me, yes, I did. Like my subconscious was trying to, you know, relate these two things. And that's always exciting. I mean, it's very special for me because then I'm like, I did a good job as an interviewer. but then of course I like leave my question out that prompted them. And so all you get is them saying like, oh, this, you know, you just hear them making the connection themselves, which is really fun.
That makes a ton of sense. And I think it speaks to what a great storyteller and podcaster you are. And I think it makes me wonder because I feel like a lot of creators these days, maybe always, I don't know, have had a lot of different mediums going on at the same time, different creative outlets. And I was curious if how you think of your work in podcasting and storytelling and what, did you have training in that? Just after all of these episodes and all this experience, how do you think about that in terms of your creative practice?
So when I started Song Exploder, I had never made anything like that. I didn't have any kind of writing or journalism background. I'd really spent the prior, you know, 12 years of my life after college trying to be a full-time musician, and I would do freelance graphic design, you know, to pay the bills when music wasn't cutting it. Mm. And making Song Exploder originally felt more like a combination of the music and design parts of my life, where I was like, okay, I know with graphic design and web design, you know, how you think about an audience's experience of something. And so it was like almost this like user experience mentality that was guiding me through how to make the show. Like, well, how do I want them to feel when they first get there? And that was really useful. I think having that kind of audience-based lens to look at the show through, and only that, you know, was helpful. It ended up making a lot of the decisions about the show very clear for me, like the fact that the episodes are short, and the fact that I am not in it, you know, that you don't hear my questions, because I was thinking, I was, you know, trying to be as sort of brutal about the audience's experience, you know, and what people might have patience for, to be basically be as much the opposite of self-indulgent as I could be. That ended up defining a lot of what the show's parameters were. But yeah, so my, the background behind it was really, and then, you know, I knew how to work in Pro Tools because I'd been making records for a decade, and understanding, you know, some things about rhythm from being a drummer. And I'd been a music editor on some films, and I'd worked as an assistant to a composer, and I moved to LA to make music for films. So the idea of like how music works with storytelling was something that I thought about a lot, but this was sort of the inverse of what the way it works in a movie, where here's the story and here's the music to play in the background to accompany it. It was more like, here's the music, what are the words to accompany it to give it more meaning? So I was kind of just trying to pull from those instincts, but I really didn't know what I was doing. And you can still argue that I don't.
I would not argue that. My gut would say that it's probably a good practice to swing the pendulum back and forth between, like, I feel like a lot of creative stuff, it's good to apply different kind of brain energies at different points in the process. Like, this is writing energy. It's not editing flow. Just do it. Then later be like brutal about it, but don't try to do them at the same time. So my guess would be that maybe there's a balance here, and I feel like it could be out of whack, because this notion of putting yourself in the audience's shoes, like, I feel like that is not, at least historically, kind of what people would say is what an artist should do, or a creator, or any, you know, art is the ultimate self-indulgence, go all in. And I get there are things about that definitely make sense, maybe in different phases, but I don't hear a lot of people doing what you just said, which was, what would be the way to eliminate myself from this creative thing? Like, I just think it's a really interesting thought experiment for a creator to have. This far into it, what's your take on that?
Well, I think that my brain divides up art and design. Having done both, and having been an art major that did both photography and graphic design, I think of them in two different categories. And the work that I make as a musician, like the songs that I write, I hope to put them in the art category. And Song Exploder, I put in the design category. And the difference for me is exactly this, what we're talking about. Like, the art is the thing that you make that comes from you, and you're not considering, I don't know, it's pulled right out of you. But design is made for an audience, you know, like the art that you make it because you are compelled to, but design is made with the idea that someone else is going to interact with it. And you're serving that audience.
Yeah.
And so Song Exploder for me never felt like my art. It has always felt like this is a thing that I do. It's like, it has taken up more prominence in my life than what it was intended to be, which was just a sort of side hustle around my music career. But I think I was never precious with it. Or at least maybe that's probably totally untrue. Probably that's kind of my main mode, but I feel like, less so than with my music where I'm like, no, it has to be this way. And I don't care if anybody doesn't get it because this is what it means to me. With Song Exploder, I was like, no, this is for an audience. And I want people to be able to get it right away. And, I mean, it's not the easiest show. It's not like a fun comedy podcast where you can just put it on and laugh. But and maybe because of that, I was like, how do I get people to care about this? And I tried to kind of like keep hammering at that. You know, I had the like, how do I make people care hammer? And I would just pound at the shape of the podcast until it felt like something that like wasn't self-indulgent, because it's a tough sell, I think, in some ways. It's to say like, hey, sit down and maybe listen to a song that you've never heard before and listen to the story of it. It's like, well, how do I get people to do that? One, I can't make it a feature length, you know, thing. It can't be an hour long conversation because that's just too much to invest for a stranger. If this artist is a stranger to you and the song is a stranger to you, it'd have to be kind of bite-sized. And also, I didn't want people to feel like I was a guy who was like in the Lord of the Rings metaphor that you had, that I like saw myself as Gandalf and I was like, let me tell you how this goes.
Yeah.
Let me dispense some wisdom here.
Yeah.
And even not in a format where I'm like, here's why this song works or here's the whatever. You know, sometimes people call Song Exploder like a music analysis show, which is fine if that's how they feel about it. But that's not at all how I feel about it, because it's not about music theory. If sometimes that stuff comes in. But for me, it's really like I said, a little portrait of this person. And so if that's the case, then maybe you don't need me in there. You know, I actually... The dream thing that you mentioned also came up a lot when I was trying to explain how to edit the TV show to the editors that I was working with. Because for the first time, I had to, you know, translate the show into this other medium with people who worked very differently and had different sort of goals than what maybe the show was. Anyway, the thing I kept saying, I remember over and over again now a few years ago, was like, you don't want to break the spell of the dream, and having too much of me, you know, the show was a little different because I was visible as an interviewer here and there, but I kept on pushing to like have less of me in there because I was like, you don't want to wake someone up from the dream. You want you want to sort of step into the dream state of the artist remembering what it felt like to create this thing. And that does feel a little bit detached from reality. It's something from their past, and you're scoring it with the things they're talking about. And it should feel a little bit like a meditation or a little bit like a dream. And if it becomes too literal and it feels too much like a back and forth conversation, then you'll never get that kind of dream state thing that I think feels like listening to music when it's really good.
I totally agree with that. And I think, so I really loved what you said, and I definitely find myself kind of falling into those categories when I approach making things like art and design or however you want to think about it. And I think because I wanted to, like, my podcast started out about creative career, like thinking about that idea. And I think it's just, I felt less conflicted when I started it 8 years ago. I felt more like, oh, those two circles could be in a Venn diagram that's quite overlapped. I think over time I felt like they're more distinct than I thought they were, but I'm still curious about the way that they overlap.
And what are the two circles?
Creativity and career.
Okay, so got it.
And I would put those, you know, I would kind of associate those with the art and design, kind of
right.
these two different things. Sometimes I think about it like writers talk about pantsers versus plotters, and like pantsers just like flow, plotters are like solving a problem more like. And mm-hmm. An example that my audience is probably sick of me talking about because it's just one I've thought a lot about is Curb Your Enthusiasm is such an interesting, they've done a really cool thing of trying to blend two energies, trying to find a way to do that where, I don't know if you're familiar, but with the way they do it, but they have a plot, but right. then they don't script the scenes. Yeah. So like it's improv and planned in a way that's really fascinating. So I don't know. I just, that's what it's got me thinking about. Like, that sweet spot, is it, you know, is it possible to try to do both at the same time? I don't know.
Well, one thing I would say, is loose with Song Exploder to some extent is the interview. You know, to make this 15-minute episode, I usually interview people for 60 to 90 minutes. And I don't know what's going to come out of it. I don't know what it's going to be. And it's really like just excavating the story. And part of the reason, too, why I prefer to cut my questions out is because like I have to, you know, poke and prod in so many silly ways sometimes to try and feel like, well, you know, it's a little bit of music therapy, you know, where they'll tell me like, then they had this part and I'll be like, well, why'd you use that instrument? And then when, what about that? And what's behind that? And what's behind that? And, you know, might not be the most fun thing to listen to, but I think it yields interesting stories sometimes. And so that stuff has to be kind of loose and messy. And then when I go to the editing side, that's when really like the design brain takes over.
Yeah, that makes tons of sense. Do you have anything from when you started to where you are now that has changed your perspective on creativity or music based on these conversations? Like, is there any dramatic shift of like, oh, I really had that wrong, or I didn't think of it that way, or just it surprised you from these conversations about maybe just even how people think of creativity or music in a way that isn't potentially true?
Yeah. I mean, I think the most important thing that this show has done for me is sort of a version of a creative pep talk, which is, it really disabused me of something that I have had lived with the entire time I'd been making music. Like I said, I didn't go to school for music, and I didn't go to school for, you know, recording music, but this is what I would do. I'd write songs and I'd hole up in my bedroom and I would record them, and not just record them, but like try and produce them and try and make something that lived up to the dream of the song that I had in my head, and that lived up to the stuff that I loved, the music that I would listen to and was inspired by. And I always heard the shortcomings. You know, I could always hear the way my talent and my taste and my technical abilities, whatever, like added up to, here's this final thing, and well, it's not as good as this thing that I love. And no matter how far I got in my career, I always kind of felt that way. And part of the reason why was because I was like, well, I don't know the right way of doing things. You know, just like with starting the podcast, where I was like, I don't know how you do this, but I'm going to do it and just hope for the best. And that was sort of my attitude with music. But there was always this little nugget of like, it would probably be better. Well, let me try that again. It would probably be better if I did actually know. And like, there's a right way to write a song. There's a right way to record every song and produce every song. And, you know, and some of my limitations were access to gear and studios and musicians. And part of it was a lack of knowledge. And what I learned from making the show is by talking to artists in all different situations who had made music that I loved, and that other people loved, is that the origins of those songs were often incredibly messy, and the production of those songs was often incredibly messy. And the idea of there being a right way to do something disappeared. There's just like, there were just ways. People just did stuff. And sometimes, yeah, people had access to all these things that I thought were missing and something came out. And sometimes songs that I loved, people were in the same position as me and they just sort of did something with whatever, or an accident led to something else. And until I had talked to them and made that episode, I never knew that. I just listened to the song and loved it and thought it was perfect and imagined this song kind of being born perfect. I found it really, really inspiring to recognize that people across all different genres and generations all kind of were doing the same thing, where they're just like, I don't know, this is what I got and I hope this works. And there's stuff you can learn from experience, and that's true, and people can certainly get better. But the idea of like there being a right way, that there's like a perfect score that exists out there in the world that I was falling short of, I got to learn that that was false.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea that you found that all these different circumstances, at no pattern in the way that they happened and came together, and it was rarely because all the perfect pieces were there and all that kind of thing. And then on the other side, the pattern of, yeah, they were all just trying it. Just trying, yeah. What if I try this? Like, is there any other pattern in terms of approach, even creatively, if it's not production, that you've taken over the years of like, huh, that's come up a bunch of times, or yeah. I don't know if anything comes to mind.
Yeah. I would say one thing that was a surprising piece of information that's emerged over the years and emerged fairly quickly was how important I think the most important tool in music making, like to speak generally across all genres and whatever, the most important tool is the voice memo app.
Yeah.
it's the thing that comes up all the time in the show. And you know, I used to ask for people to send me the multi-tracks of their songs so we could listen to it sort of stem by stem. But now I also ask, do you have any voice memos? Was there a moment when you started this that you whipped out your phone and said, let me record this? And getting those is as exciting to me as the initial impulse of the show of hearing the things broken down, because it's really like it's this raw capture of somebody's imagination. And it's messy, and it is the like purest form of the first draft a lot of times. And I decided to start using that myself. I was like, well, this is a tool that is there. And I think that's what makes it so powerful, is that like at your fingertips, you have the capacity to capture something really, really instinctive. And I think so much of what makes art interesting and also hard to do is the translation of an instinct into something that you can express to someone else. But here's this thing that's like, I'm going to document that instinct in the instant that it happens. You don't have to like set up a mic. As soon as you like set up a microphone and hit record, it's like already so many other thoughts have happened that might adulterate whatever that initial impulse was. But if you can just be like, oh, I'm thinking it's like this. And that's been incredible.
That makes tons of sense. And it reminds me of this thing I think it's called the Bed Bath and Bus. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Okay. It's a thing, as I, every once in a while, I'll get curious and start like trying to dive into like neuroscience around creativity. And I've had some fun times there, but if you go too deep and you start listening to people talking to other neuroscientists, you're like, I don't know what they're talking about. But one of the ones, I don't know where this came from, so I'll have to look it up to put it in the show notes, but there's a thing, I think it's called the Bed Bath and Bus. And it's about how they have found that so many of those moments of inspiration strike in places like the bed, the bath, and the bus. And the voice memo thing has made it so that we're never in a place where we can't capture that, which is really, that's a great point.
Yeah. That's so funny. It didn't connect in my mind, because in my head it's the bed, car, and shower. And somehow I was like, I don't know what this means. But of course I know what that means. Those are the three places where all of my ideas have been born, basically.
That's really interesting. I'm going to go dive back into that too and see like what things get in the way of those things happening, because it's interesting too. It makes me think, well, you have the voice memo app, but you also have all the ways that this thing can distract you from having those moments.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's your, you know, it's a very powerful tool. It can maybe get in your way or be the thing that paves the way.
People have those, you know, they downgrade to like dumb phones or like flip phones or whatever. There should be a version where it's like, it's a dumb phone, but it still has the voice memos app. That's it.
That's the next product from Song Exploder. That's the thing that's going to freaking make you a billionaire. That you got to get some venture capital on that, because I think musicians everywhere need that. That's amazing. Well, hey, this was fantastic. I mean, I just could do this all day. Just I love hearing your thoughts. I think you're an incredible creator and storyteller. And then also just the wealth of creative in experience and information that you've been able to glean is just, I'm extremely jealous. Like the people you've talked to, good Lord. Did you ever think that you'd be having these conversations?
No. Last year I remember, I did an episode with Madonna and I was like, what is this? What is happening?
Have you got any tricks to, do you panic before talking to Madonna, or have you figured that out?
It's not panic exactly. It's more like, you know, sometimes people have asked me if I get starstruck when talking to these big names. And it's not really that I get starstruck, because I think I'm too mission focused in the moment. I think what I get nervous about is like, can I get them to give me what I need? You know, can I get them to actually talk about the song in a kind of potent and tactile way where you feel like you're living in their memory? And that's always hard. And, you know, and like how many chances will I get to ask them the same? If I ask them a question and I don't get the answer that I want, I have X number of attempts before I have to give up and move on, you know? And so I'll say, well, can I ask it this way? So in the moment I panic a little bit about like, am I going to get this bit? Cause I'm sort of editing as I'm interviewing at the same time. I still don't have that part. It's more about that than it is, I have been listening to you since I was 4 years old.
Do you have you found any tricks to get your head in that space, or get the right atmosphere between you and the person you're interviewing? Have you found any ways of getting kind of better at that?
Well, I try and pace things so that I'm not asking the hardest, deepest questions up front. And so I kind of switch from what the underlying question is. I start off with a little more of like what and when, and then go to how, and then live in why towards the end. Because then I think hopefully they've built some level of comfort and trust with me. And they've settled in and they can start to forget about themselves and stop thinking about the mic that's in front of them and the headphones that they're wearing or whatever, and just being sort of caught up. And one of the biggest tools that I have for luring people out of their self-consciousness is the isolated tracks from their song, because I get to play this thing back to them, something that they've made that they might not have heard for years. Or even if it's a new song, by the time it comes out, you know, the last stages of the song are mixing it and mastering it. And then there's all this promotion, and it's maybe in that cycle of promotion that you've come to do Song Exploder. But the moment where you just played that one guitar part by itself might be so far in your rearview mirror that when I play that for them. I'm giving them a little sense memory of their own experience. And so I trying to create that dream state for them to start talking about, oh, I remember it was like this and I felt this. I don't have to do that just with words.
That's great. I love that softball thing of what and how is so easy because it's not vulnerable. There's just answers there too.
Yeah.
That's great. I really love that. It's going to help me in my next one. I love this. I really appreciate your time and thanks for making the show. All right. Massive thanks to Hrishikesh Hirway for taking the time. It was just a great chat. I ended up leaving just super filled up with creative energy and inspiration. I hope you're feeling the same way. Like I promised, I'm going to give you a quick CTA, a creative call to adventure on how to take some of these ideas and put them to action in your creative practice right now. And I'm calling this the creative key. So many of you will know the story of how when I first posted the Invisible Things back in 2018, I'd already dripped out content around Invisible Things for years. I had been working on that project since at least 2011, maybe 2012. That's when I first started writing stories around the whisper and the dream thing, these little personified abstract ideas. And I started to integrate these characters into my work in all kinds of different ways. And I posted things about drawing invisible things since 2008, because my work has always been about trying to visualize the invisible. And eventually, after pitching books around this property and this topic for years and just not getting anywhere and posting stuff, kind of hidden things and hiding these characters in my work and kind of subversively integrating these ideas into almost everything I was making, I got really frustrated because I felt like nobody was picking up what I was putting down. No one was getting what was cool about this. And I felt like, man, this thing is so exciting and interesting to me. I'm just sick of nobody getting what's cool about this. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to lay it out in the most simple, straightforward way and just explain what this project is with a post that's kind of a key, like a key to a map for understanding my work. And I put invisible things at the top and I put a bunch of the characters and I put their what they represented underneath them. And I posted that to Twitter. And that post just really took off, took on a whole life of its own. People started tagging themselves in it of the ones that they related to the most. And it went all over the world. Like it had a life in different languages and ultimately was the thing that unlocked my new picture book that I co-created with my wife, Sophie Miller, that's coming out July 18th, 2023. And it all came from this moment of saying, I'm not going to hide my biggest, most favorite ideas in these subversive, invisible places. I'm going to just come out and explain what this thing is. Now, I think there are plenty of times in your creative journey where you can put Easter eggs in your work. You can build in layers of meaning that you don't over-explain and you let just kind of work on people subconsciously or catch on in their own time. But if you're in a place where you're not getting the opportunities you want, nobody is seeing what you're trying to achieve, I think it's important to remember that almost every creator that's ever had success has had to have those moments in meetings where they're selling their movie and they're explaining what's so good about it, or they're promoting the album and they're talking in interviews and they're having to give some clues and some hints to what's happening or what the intentions are in the work. And for me personally, some of those moments where you see, you know, I remember I mentioned Rostam at the beginning of this. One of the episodes of Song Exploder that I love the most is Rostam explaining his song Bike Dream. And Vampire Weekend, which was his original band that he was in, I didn't get them. I'd heard some of their songs of their first album, but I didn't get them until I saw a video of them playing some of their songs live. And all of a sudden, the context of the room and the attitude that they were showing up to the performance with, it just clicked. And you never know what little piece of behind the scenes information might help somebody get what you're trying to achieve in your work. And so I wanted to leave you with this prompt: to create a post on social media that takes your favorite piece of work or your favorite idea and breaks it down in a behind the scenes sort of way, and actually create something cool. Don't just talk about it, but create some new work that really makes this idea accessible. And that can be your creative key for understanding your best piece or your general practice at large. If you're not in a place where your audience is crazy about your work and people are knocking down your door to give you new opportunities, this can be a really good practice to help light the fuse. So that's your creative call to adventure today. Massive thanks again to Hrishikesh Hirway for being on the show. I love what you do, man, and really appreciate you taking the time. This episode was brought to you by the invisible thing, Echo.
Echo.
Echo was the second invisible thing that Sophie and I came up with. I came up with the whisper. That was the first one. And then we started talking about how this could be a series. And Echo was the second one that we came up with. And that was actually Sophie's idea. She'd already visualized Echo as being this creature that repeats what you say when she was talking to our kids about what an echo was. And so Echo is the second one. And of course, echo is an invisible thing that's a sound, which sounds related to this episode being all about music and songs. But also echo is kind of a spiritual supporter of this episode, because I think it's important not to be afraid to echo your sentiments, to explain yourself, to repost work that you're proud of. Like, it's okay to echo yourself and fight your case of why people should take a look at what you're doing. And so I'm encouraging you to embrace and embody the invisible thing of echo this week. If you don't know, we have a new picture book. You do know, because you've heard me say it a million times, but we are in the crunch time. We are in the go time. It is the important moment for us to get people to get on those pre-orders. If you pre-order the book, you can submit your receipt via the button on invisiblethings.co to the publisher, and you'll get a free poster. We are also doing a promo where if you do before July 18th, if you buy 10 copies and you send it to my email at hi@andyjpizza.com, you can instantly sign up for a one-on-one creative direction, creative identity call with me, a one-on-one call where we explore where you're at and where you want to go together, an hour-long call. We don't open those up very often, and so we did this as a special occasion to try to get the word out about this thing that means so much to us. And I'm really, really excited for the world to see it. So you can go learn more at invisiblethings.co. Thank you so much for the people that have already come out in massive support. The publisher is overwhelmed and excited by how many posters they have to send out, but they said they've never seen, I don't know if this is real or not, but they said they've never seen a pre-order incentive with this much action. So I really, really appreciate it. But we're not really quite to our goals yet to get on the kinds of lists and radars that will help this book have a real chance of, you know, reaching lots of kids. And so we need your help. InvisibleThings.co. Really appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music and our soundtrack. Thanks to Connor Jones for editing and sound design. Thanks to Katie Chandler, Ryan Appleton, and Sophie Miller for podcast assistance of all kinds. And thanks to, thanks for listening or something. And until we speak again, stay pepped up.